Hello, everybody. I'm Douglas Kretz. This is the Microsoft BizSpark Show. We're back for another week talking to the newest entrepreneurs out there working on the newest projects. And today we have a very special show. We have representatives from Nigeria talking. We have an entrepreneur from Nigeria and a professor from Nigeria who's also himself an entrepreneur. And a good friend of mine, Chikadi Chima, is in the house today. We're going to have a discussion about basically the African diaspora entrepreneurship in Africa writ large and the things that education and technology can do to improve business opportunities in that part of the world. So I'll just go really quickly around the table and introduce everybody. The guy to my right is Chikadi Chima. He's the founder of Moonshot, which is a Moonshot agency, or you're a PR agency for startups.
Yeah.
Yep. And also Nigerian.
Yes.
Right? Were you born in Nigeria?
My father was born in Imo State.
Cool.
And I was born in Seattle.
Good. And to my left is Professor Ndubuisi Ekwekwe. Am I saying it correctly?
Yeah, you got it right.
Pretty close. Who until recently was with Carnegie Mellon and is now starting his own university in Africa called First Atlantic University. We'll talk more with him about the aims behind that. We're very happy to. You just got off a flight from Africa, so we're very happy to see you here.
Thank you. Thank you.
And up until recently, we had somebody on a Skype call named Elvis Austins, who is a entrepreneur who's created a nonprofit called Spell Africa Initiative. And that initiative is very interesting. It teaches people how to become literate through the use of the mobile phone. Maybe the best thing to do is actually let Chikadi kick off and kind of give us context for all of these conversations that we're having here this week. There's actually a big week in Silicon Valley for African initiatives. So do you want to just give us a little list of what's going on?
All right. So we are here, and thank you very much for having us.
It's not a problem.
And tomorrow at WeWork Golden Gate in San Francisco, we're actually going to be having an info session where we're going to be talking about First Atlantic University, and we're going to be talking about the wave of innovation that is sweeping over Africa. And
when you say the wave of innovation, what are you talking about exactly? Are you talking about tech startups, or are you talking about just entrepreneurship in general?
There's a huge, huge surge of entrepreneurship happening in several countries, in Ghana, in Nigeria, in Kenya, South Africa, and really the tools that are empowering startups in the United States are now becoming readily available, and it's very exciting to see what's happening. So we're going to be talking about the opportunities that are emerging and how partnerships can be formed.
Cool. And Professor, can I just call you Professor? Is that acceptable?
That's
okay.
Great. Thank you.
You're starting. There have been many other schools in Africa before. There have been many schools in Nigeria. But what makes this school different, and why are you attempting to create this? The way I saw it written was as like Africa's first big global university, I guess. What's the intent behind this?
That's great. Thank you very much. Let me just begin by saying that it's quite a very good opportunity for us to have this platform to share the vision of what exactly we're trying to do.
You're welcome.
The First Atlantic University is largely a new type of university, because we are looking at seeing how we can unlock talent opportunities out of young Africans. You know, there are many universities in Africa, so this is not going to be the first university, of course, but there is something we want to do differently. It will be the first university that will have a technology park right inside the campus. We believe that for us to transition from the process of invention to innovation, we have to have a university system that brings world-class quality into the university system. So invention is essentially someone coming up with a new idea. But until you can commercialize that idea, it remains an invention. Mm-hmm. It's only when that you have brought innovation that is actually when you begin to help an economy. Mm-hmm. Africa has not been very, very lucky, because we have a university system across the different economies in Africa, yet we are not necessarily making great progress. So the First Atlantic University is designed to help the local economy look at specific areas where they have problems and begin to offer real life solutions to them. And we're bringing a group of partners from Silicon Valley, from Boston, from Asia. And we are just trying to see how we can put Africa into working by using technology, by using the brain power of different people in Africa, in Asia, in America, we'll see how we can redesign the continent of Africa.
And is the motive there to tap into the pervasive use of mobile devices in that continent? And is it also, I mean, I've heard you say in other interviews that you want to sort of reverse the trend in Africa from consumption of technology from other places to the production of technology, which would be the creation of jobs, and then also the kind of entrepreneurial spirit that you kind of, the kind of stuff that you see here in Silicon Valley.
Absolutely, great. I think that is really the motivation here.
Yep.
You know, I believe today that a structure, I would say most companies, especially multinational companies across the world, the way they see Africa, they see us from the lens of a place where they can accelerate technology consumerism. You know, we buy the software, we buy all this hardware, we buy all the systems. But we've never really had the opportunity of developing local capacity that will help us to design these things, build these things, and accelerate wealth creation within the African continent.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what this university is working, and that's what this university will do. It will give us that leverage that, hey, these technologies are great, but when can we begin to do them right in Africa?
Right.
And we will offer these multinational companies the opportunity of giving them great talents, well-trained technology leaders that will make them to come right into the continent to begin to have design centers, research and development centers, so that innovation can also happen locally.
And I've seen this in other regions. You know, there are a lot of technologies that happen in Asia, for example, that leapfrog over things that are happening in, quote-unquote, the West. If you can get that kind of acceleration and that kind of motivation going at home in Nigeria, what kinds of technologies do you think people would be interested in? What kinds of production do you think would be ignited with that kind of participation? And is there anything that's happening on that continent that could happen here and maybe fuel some of the growth that's needed in the United States, for example? Do you see any parallels?
I think there are a lot of parallels here. If you go through India especially, you discover that they actually created what they call frugal innovation. You know, in understanding that a typical boy in America, he grew up in more affluent environment than a typical boy in India. So like when I was in a PhD student at Johns Hopkins University, the problem was not necessarily you don't have anything to do your research. The problem, there were a lot of resources for you to work with. But if you go to India, if you go to Africa, you discover that most students that are doing their engineering research works may not necessarily have that level of resource. So that drives the way they see engineering problem. They see engineering problem from the lens of scarcity, from the lens that they have to accomplish more with little. And we believe African students and African engineers, they have a role to play in this area. Because of their life circumstances, because of the experiences they have had through in life, they can unlock opportunities.
Yeah.
It may not necessarily be the present revolution of what is happening in the Western world. I still believe that technology continues to advance the course of human civilization. And all we need to do is to provide a platform where these students will have world-class education so that they become thinkers, thought leaders, that may unlock opportunities that no one is thinking today. It's possible that after ICT, there may be something else. And after green tech, there could be another opportunity.
Yeah.
No one knows where it is going to come from.
And we have I think by the sound of the feedback I'm hearing on the speaker, is Elvis with us? Elvis, hello. Can you hear us?
Yes, I'm right here.
That's great. You actually have a seedbed kind of story. You have a story of this kind of innovation kind of happening a little bit by accident, but led through a kind of purposeful existence. Do you want to tell a little bit about your story, Elvis, about how you came up with Spell Africa Initiative?
Of course, yes. Spell Africa started as a result of my growing up in Africa. Just like the professor just said, you know, in Africa, we don't really have exactly what people have over there in the Western world. And I grew up not being privileged to have basic education. My family were unable to send me to school, so I grew up practically without basic education. And as time went by, I knew I was smart, I could do things, but I was challenged with the ability to communicate with people. So I said to myself, nah, you have some hidden talent, but you just cannot tell this out. What are you supposed to do? And you have to learn English language. And I said, oh, nah, I wasn't having the privilege of going to school. How am I supposed to learn this? I bought a small dictionary, and every day of the week, I'll try to read a word, study the word, and try to make use of that word from the dictionary, like every day of my life. In a very short while, I discovered that I was really learning something great. So I said to myself, this could be something that others could benefit from. That was just the birth of Spell Africa Initiative. When I was doing it in Africa, I was challenged with just like the difficulty right now, the Skype internet connection. Here in Nigeria, we're using power generator sets right now as I speak to you. And if it goes off, everyone will be dark. Even the laptop will go down. It's still the kind of challenges we face here in Africa. Then sometimes when you wake up in the house in Nigeria, in Benin City where I was born, there's no power. You can't even read the dictionary. So at the time, I started to think, how could you marry this with technology? And that's when the idea got to me that you just could use XMS. I bought Buck SMS credit and I tried it. I programmed it online. It was sent to my phone on a daily basis. Every day of the week, I'll get a word, meaning of the word and the usage as text message to my phone. This kept on for a while. I felt like this thing was really helping me. I wanted to help others to benefit also. So I searched through my phone at Ramdon. I got the numbers of selected friends, added it up into the Buck SMS platform. It went through their phones also. In about the space of 2 weeks, I went try to tell my friend, hey, can I see your phone? This message, where did you get it from? How does it work? He said, I don't know, but I think this is good. I'm really benefiting from it. And then I knew this is just the start of something big. And that's how it turned to be a career for me.
Is Elvis, that's a great story, Elvis. Is Elvis's story, Jakadi, is this a common story for Nigeria or parts of Africa, or is this an uncommon story?
Well, there's a blog called AfriGadget, and if you go to AfriGadget, you'll see that there are all kinds of innovation that are born of necessity. So this frugal innovation is very prevalent. It's just that there's not a media that shines a spotlight on it, but wherever there's a need, people are coming up with solutions for the need however they can. And if we were to go village to village and town to town, you would see many similar solutions. You know, what Elvis has been able to do is come up with a solution that scales very easily without any friction. Yeah. And so that's the real beauty of what Spell Africa has done. You know, the resources that are needed to create innovation, you know, when that's there, we'll see amazing things like we're already seeing. So, you know, without being exposed to more of these types of innovations, I can just say that from my experience, yes, it's absolutely happening.
I mean, and you also feel, you hear, at least in the United States, you hear a lot of mythology about there not being enough good startups to invest in, whether they're a nonprofit startup or a for-profit startup. Is that necessarily true for parts of Africa? Is there a scarcity of startups, or is there actually a lot of people like Elvis who are actually out doing that kind of stuff that we could be funding, we meaning anyone who wants to be an investor or who has that capacity to be an investor?
Yeah, I think that's really a very, very good question, because I think that was last year. I wrote an article in the Harvard Business Review. I use a case scenario of a young man called William Kwakwanzo. Hmm. William was the guy, I think he was 14 years old, and in East Africa, he provided electricity by tapping the wind for his family. You know, in the TED conference circuit, he was a very, very popular guy. So he was going around the whole world telling people about this brave, smart young man. People were so excited about him. But something was not happening, as I explained in my article in Harvard Business, that no one actually told him, say, hey, young man, you have the mind of Thomas Edison. I'm going to invest in you. Mm. That electricity that you have provided for your family, I want you to provide it for your neighbors. I want you to provide it for your county. I want you to provide it for your state. I want you to provide it for your country. If that guy had been born in Tezax, he might have been one of the richest young people. But because he was in Africa, the money was not coming. The funding was not coming. But you are not necessarily going to blame the investors. The problem here is that most times there is not just an easy strategy for some of these investors to actually put money into Africa. In some African economies, there is no stock market. And the intellectual property rights are not necessarily well enforced. You know, government has not necessarily set up a structure that actually enables investors to risk their capital on that propensity that if things really go very well, that they can benefit from it. So that's the reason why you have pockets of these brave smart young people doing great things in Africa, but at the end of the day, nothing really happens.
What should those young minds be doing? What is the recourse for them if there isn't a First Atlantic University yet, or there isn't this sort of widespread economic education or financial education or risk education? What is their recourse now? Should they be going to some other country or?
I think in the past, what people have been doing is people like me live in Nigeria, and people like maybe Chikodi and so many other people live in the country, believing that the only way you could get some of these things done is by leaving the country. But I do believe because of the internet, at least Evis has the opportunity of participating in this because of the internet. Because without the internet, no one would even notice that he was doing what he was doing. So now his message is going out. Hopefully somebody may be interested. He said, okay, young man, how can I help you? But for us, when we are working on our strategy for the university, we said, we are not just going to get these students together, educate them at the end of the day. There is no infrastructure to help them get that knowledge or idea from the laboratory to the market. So the First Atlantic University is also raising VC fund to be the first university in Africa where some very great ideas that are coming out of the university, that fund will invest in them.
Yeah. So what message are you giving people here in the States, since you spend most of your time here, you work in Silicon Valley? I mean, I've actually been a guest on your podcast. You're interviewing entrepreneurs all the time. Has your focus shifted to trying to bring people from this part of the world over to that part of the world to kind of get some of this infrastructure in place and some of this, I guess, thought leadership in place, and maybe even give it, you know, rise it, you know, raise it up in Africa where it exists already?
Well, there's two things.
Yeah.
So, and I would love to have Elvis tell about how we actually met, because I think that speaks to my mission as an entrepreneur. But I think that bringing best practices and sharing those best practices readily is very important. But then also one of the things, and this is a discussion that I'm sure you're privy to, is that a lot of hard problems are not being solved by some of the best minds here in Silicon Valley, and there are lots of problems to be solved. You know, I say that an entrepreneur never lets a good problem go to waste.
Yeah.
So,
but your sense is that there are problems being gone to waste.
There's plenty of problems going to waste, and there's lots of intellectual capital that's going to easy comfort solutions. And I think that it's valuable if someone is willing to pay for something that makes their life more comfortable, then obviously the market will respond to that. But I think that we live in a time of unprecedented challenge, and we have so many tools available to really solve these problems. And there are people who are dealing with basic life challenges that technology can make their lives better.
So let's hear from Elvis then how you guys met, so that maybe we can paint a picture for how this stuff is happening in your life and in Elvis's life on a day-to-day, or people like Elvis's life on a day-to-day basis. Elvis, how did you guys meet?
I actually met Chikodi on the internet through
his can't remember.
Blog. What really happened was that, you know, constantly, because just like being said, Nigeria, the government of this country don't really have support for entrepreneurs. And there is no way you go in this country that will tell you, this is what you're doing, you should do it this way or do it that way. That's the biggest problem we're having as entrepreneurs. And so for me, I believed on the power.
Okay. Yeah. A little bit of a freeze.
Yeah, finish the story, Chicago.
Yeah, so what's really amazing about Elvis's story is that with his internet access, he had his idea, and he did not have the government support to incorporate a company. I think they wanted $800 or $1,000 just for the incorporation fees before he had any, before anything could happen as an incorporated business in Nigeria. So he started looking online for where he could incorporate his business, and he happened on New Zealand. So he started contacting people who he thought would be amenable to his idea. Oh, Elvis is back. So why don't you talk about how you were able to use the internet to create a network around the world to advance the Spell Africa initiative?
Okay, just soon as after I discovered that this is really going to work, this XMS could really be a tool to help people learn English language. I went to the Corporate Affairs Commission of my country, Nigeria, to see I want to register this. Because from my point of view, most people say, hey, we love this service, but we cannot afford to pay much for it. You give us very cheap or at least no fee. You know, we don't have money. So I felt when this thing, if this thing is on a non-profit model, it's going to be very fine. So that's when I went to the Corporate Affairs Commission in my country to say, I want to get this registered as a non-profit. But I was shocked when I was told, you will need $1,000 to get it registered. I was like, that's too expensive. How am I supposed to get $1,000? I don't even have $100. But that was the only way. So for like 2 weeks, I was honestly in deep frustration. I was thinking, I love this project. I want to do this, but now there's no money to register it. Then I said, I have this idea that you could get this thing registered somewhere. You are trying to improve English vocabulary. Why don't you look elsewhere you could get this done? And my first point of call would be the Great Britain. So I searched through the office, open office of the country to say I could get this thing registered, but there was a fee attached to it. So I drew a list of all the English countries. I would search from country to country's website to see which one would allow for a free registration. Until I came across New Zealand, a small island country close to Australia. When I got to the website and I discovered, they said you could get this thing absolutely for free. It was really good news to me. I was like, oh man, this is nice, you know. I don't need to pay money for this. Immediately, I started looking at all the requirements. I saw, you have to construct a deed of trust, like the document association of the document. You know, I was putting documents together. And on the day I came online to say, let me get this thing registered, I saw one big obstacle. And it was, you need a New Zealander, that is someone from that country, to back your application before it can be registered. That was like the biggest stumbling block I could ever have at that time. So I was so distressed again. But something said to me, if you've gone this far, you still can push ahead. This time I went on Facebook, I started searching for friends online in New Zealand. I came across many people and we became good friends and all that. But one particular lady, her name is Shame Hamas. You know, after we started talking on Facebook and I told her my dream, say, look, this is my problem. And now I just want other people to benefit.
So one of the things that's striking about Elvis's story, though, is that he, like a lot of other people that I've seen in other countries, is not able to reach out to people in his own city to find people to answer these questions. But yet you have to go to someone in New Zealand or you have to talk to some guy in San Francisco through an email. It seems to me that our networks now are highly distributed and highly fragmented. I mean, now is a good place for me to say that, you know, we have the Microsoft for Africa initiative in Africa. Microsoft has been there for 22 years. We're in 19 different cities there, and that's some of that is in conjoining work with BizSpark, and BizSpark is a way of offering this kind of entrepreneurial community. But it sounds to me from listening to Elvis that the entrepreneurial community, which is sort of the first thing you need, is just entirely lacking.
Yeah.
Why is that? Is that because the sense of business in Nigeria is so much different than, say, what it's like here in San Francisco, where someone asked me to give them some seed money for something? Or what?
Yeah, I think the problem here, specifically for Ervix, is very difficult to register a nonprofit in Nigeria than actually to register a company.
Yeah.
You could register and incorporate a business name, just like a sole proprietorship in Nigeria, very, very easy. But if you want to do a foundation, a nonprofit, the government will not believe you. The government will think that you're trying to dodge paying tax. Mm-hmm. So they make life very, very difficult.
Right.
So
But why is that suspicion there? Is it suspicion or is it just barriers?
You know, these are like because of experience, where you have people running a business because of the incapacity of the country mm-hmm. to actually track tax revenue. So you set up a non-profit, the government doesn't have to charge you tax, but you're actually making money and you're just using it as if you're running a typical okay. business.
Yeah. So the government says, it's a safeguard against fraud, really.
Yeah, we don't want that kind of tax. Yeah. Maybe kind of a fraud. So the government said, we don't want people to register nonprofit. Before you can register a nonprofit, you want to be very, very sure.
But is anybody aware? I mean, you all, there must be whole communities in Nigeria or other parts of Africa that are just coming into this realization, just like it's happening here in the U.S., that we're increasingly surrounded by more and more intelligent people because we have access to information. You're an educator. You're very insistent on having education and not just the transfer of information. In your fantasy, and maybe Elvis can also weigh in here, what would make it easier for entrepreneurs to actually do the work that they need to do and be able to tap into the stuff that's happening in Silicon Valley, or to be able to mimic what's happening in New York or London or other parts of the world where there's entrepreneurial communities are thriving with or without the assistance of government?
Yeah.
What are those pieces, do you think?
I think this is really very great because I feel it's very, very... you know, this kind of exuberance when you see some of these multinationals coming into Africa, opening some of these initiatives like the For Africa initiative by Microsoft. You know, let's say for instance, if Elvis has gone maybe into For Africa initiatives, it doesn't necessarily exist right now because they are still trying to set up the structure. Somebody might have given him a kind of a roadmap how he can overcome some of these challenges. And you could learn a lot of things about Silicon Valley if you have a very good internet access. You could learn a lot of things about what is going on in New York City. And people are meeting online, people are talking, sharing data, sharing information. But the fact remains that, especially if you are living in Africa, we've not gotten to that level where people treat this thing with a lot of respect, you know, and that is the greatest challenge. You know, if Elvis had been born in, let's say, in India, his case might have a little bit different. The way investors, the way other people that are participating in the ecosystem will see his opportunity is going to be different than when he's coming from Africa. I'll give you an example. You know, when you talk to some private equity firms or some VCs, the first question they ask you, has Nigeria had any very good technology exit? And if you cannot answer that question, you have to prove why you are going to be the first person that will have that exit.
Isn't that a kind of a weird way of looking at the problem, though?
Yeah, but, you know, it is more of a kind of a mathematical algorithm where they said, okay, this group of guys are the people, I've invested in them in the past. It turned out very, very well. I'm still going to be investing in those kind of guys because they are the people that keep giving me good returns. And that's a problem. So all of a sudden, you have to have something unique to break into that mood because that is how they think.
So
I'd love to answer the question. Also, so, you know, across Africa, there is a history of entrepreneurship, and there have been a lot of merchants who've come from places like Lebanon and India who are very established and have multi-generational entrepreneurial families in many of the largest cities of Africa, not tech entrepreneurship.
Yes. Correct.
You know, and what sets Silicon Valley apart, you can't just replicate it. A lot of people want to put the elements that make Silicon Valley successful, but there's multiple generations of technology entrepreneurship here, and people are very open about the mistakes they've made. And that's that the value of people sharing their mistakes and their failures is something that's culturally unique to Silicon Valley.
Yeah, I was going to ask. I was going to ask if it's in, and maybe Elvis can tell me his experience in Nigeria. I mean, you are working with a nonprofit, but is it hard to fail at things in Nigeria?
Very difficult, very, very difficult. The first thing in Nigeria you have to understand is that we do not have the basics, okay? We do not have power. We do not have cheap access to the internet. Many years I have been in this industry. For example, I do not have a personal laptop. You can imagine. And I have to make use of the internet as my only source of connecting to the outside world. It's a difficult problem, not just for me alone, but for almost all the Nigerians. You see, people have good ideas. They are smart. And there is market in Nigeria. For example, when we look at the mobile phone industry, we have 120 million Nigerians connected to mobile phones. That's a big market space. But the people who could think of something have to use these things to make developments, to make changes. These people don't have what it takes. Just to, the cost of getting an internet for this discussion cost me like 2,000 naira. That would be like how much in naira? I can in dollar maybe like $10 or so. You understand? Most $12, good. Most people cannot afford that, you know. And that would deprive them for having this conversation. So now, when this person has not even eaten, he does not have the money to afford the internet connection. How is he supposed to make changes? That is the problem. The government has not done the basics. But for people who wants to aspire, who really wish to make a change, they could go as fast any length to do that. Like, for example, I spent close to 30 minutes distance to come to a nearby cyber cafe, and that is where I am right now, Skyping with you. I do that on a daily basis, because this is the only place I have internet. There's no 3G in my house where I live. That's my apartment. But when I come down to the campus, the University of Benin, I do have one. I'll have to make this journey day and night. So most people who are passionate about what they do, they are serious. They definitely want to do this to take it to the next level. But mind you, it is very difficult.
And yeah, I mean, it's a testament to the strength of your human will that you were able to do all this stuff, even given the challenges that you've gone through. I guess as we close up the interview, it's been really nice to have both of you here. And Elvis, thank you for taking your time. And it's probably very late there getting online with us. I guess, you know, for people who want more information about this stuff, there's some stuff that's going to be happening in Silicon Valley this week. Why don't we guide them there? Where should they go for a little bit more information about professor's school and stuff like that? Chakotay, you want to?
So we're having an event tomorrow, as I said, in San Francisco, and that's going to be from 6 to 8 at WeWork Golden Gate. If you want to get information both about the event and about First Atlantic University, you can go to afrit2.eventbrite.com, and you can also go to afrit.org. That's the informational portal for the African Institution of Technology, which is responsible for First Atlantic University.
Sure. And we'll post this stuff too. We'll post this information too so people can see it.
All right. So thank you very much for listening. It's quite been a very wonderful moment sharing with you. I would say generally the African continent is a hopeful one. It's a very, very great one that we believe has a lot of exuberance. And anyone that wants to participate there is open for people to take opportunities, and just believing that Africa is there to stay, and people really have to come and give a lot of help to the continent. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Well, thank you both of you for joining, and thank you, Elvis, for joining from Benin City. This has been another edition of the Microsoft BizSpark show. I will be gone for 17 days. I am actually going to Africa, going to South Africa, Namibia, perhaps Botswana as well. And I will return early November. So November 4th will be our next show. Thank you, everybody, for joining, and I wish you well.
Doug, thank you.
Bye-bye.